Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to issue 4148 of The Bugle. We are recording on Friday the 10th of April 2020, news evolving at an all-time record speed. Since I began talking approximately 30 seconds ago, economics has been temporarily suspended for the first time in more than 25 years. No economics will take place until next Thursday at the earliest. The Dow Jones will bunk off for all of next week. London's FTSE will not be allowed to switch itself on. It will be the Nikkei is being forcibly isolated. This follows money as a concept losing 36% of itself over the course of this week before pulling itself back together last night after a few drinks and a hot bath. But money still down 8% in credibility, a significant but just about manageable decline. And another quickly breaking news story: Estonia has hibernated, and no end date on that. These are confusing times. I'm joined from various points around the universe. Well, firstly, from a long way away in Australia, Alice Fraser.
Hello, Andy. Hello, Buglers. How are you?
I'm adequate. Let's not go overboard. you know, what about you?
I am slowly losing touch with reality. There's something to be said right. for doing a daily satirical news podcast set in an alternate dimension while you have no access to the real world.
I've been losing touch with reality is, I mean, something that I've been just working on gradually over the past 45 years. Also joining us from considerably less far away, in fact, just a few miles away, here in London, it's Al Murray. Hello, Al.
Now, I'm pretty much convinced this is only happening to me, and this is like the world's most elaborate practical joke. And my whole street are in on it. My street doesn't do anything together, but last night they were all out clapping like they knew each other. Totally ridiculous.
Just lean out the window and tell a joke before they start clapping.
Yeah, it's what a wonderful time to be furloughed with a toddler. If this child were a year younger, it'd be fine, more manageable. A year older, we'd be able to reason with it. However,
so how old precisely?
Two and 4 months. So right in the sweet spot for she's just learned how to say no, which is not what you want when you're not allowed out. I mean, we're furloughed. We've been locked down. She doesn't understand.
Yeah,
you know. And we were out for a walk the other morning, and she ran into a friend who's had it, and he was keeping his distance and everything. And she ran to give him a cuddle, and he ran away from her. And it was like the most heartbreaking moment of all. So it encapsulated the entire situation.
Yeah,
it's like Alan Border in the 1989 Ashes all over again. We are recording on the 10th of April 2020. On this day in the year 837, Halley's Comet made its closest ever approach to Earth at just 3.2 million miles away, as measured by Brother Ethelgrouch in a monastery in Lindisfarne, who was apparently a dab hand at judging celestial distances. Halley's Comet not due back until 2061. Although there are rumours that this could now be delayed until 2062 because of the coronavirus crisis, which has already seen two comet flybys cancelled and another indefinitely postponed. As always, a section of the Bugle is going straight in the bin. This week, how to keep yourself occupied during lockdown. We've been giving you various tips, but with lockdown now in full swing across many parts of the world, what do you do other than listening to each week's episodes of The Bugle and The Last Post 10 times over and analysing the hidden messages within? Well, luckily for you, The Bugle this week gives you a smorgasbord of ideas for things for you to do alone, with your housemates, partners, with your family, or with the increasingly awkward door-to-door salesperson who called at very much the wrong time just as lockdown was being imposed and is now stuck in your house for the foreseeable future, along with the 18 sets of double-glazed patio doors that he has persuaded you to buy. Alan, can we please talk about something else? Have I mentioned the advantages of a bifold door? F*** you, Alan. I want you to leave. So we have an entire week of activities planned out to keep you busy and active and stimulated to fill the aching void in your daily schedule. Monday's activity is navel-gazing. It's not often you get the time and opportunity to clear the introspective decks enough to indulge in a prolonged bout of self-indulgent reflection on exactly what you're doing with your life. So take this opportunity to spend a full afternoon really sinking into a soup of regret, doubt and worry like a not especially comforting tepid bath. And the great thing with navel-gazing is that it's not something you can get done in a day and then put to one side. It can keep you occupied and entertained for weeks and weeks on end through the interminable human permafrost of lockdown. Tuesday. Existential dread. This is a genuine family activity. Gather round and think about all the implications for the world, all the things that have gone so disastrously wrong as a result of decisions we've made or not made in the past, and the things that are likely to go disastrously wrong as a result of the decisions we're making now and will make in the future. Don't worry if your dread is interrupted by occasional eruptions of wild optimism about forging a new, more collaborative, more humane world order. This is perfectly natural and all part of the process of coming to the conclusion that we are, in fact, totally doomed. Wednesday, midlife crisis. Consolidate all your activities from Monday's navel-gazing and Tuesday's existential dread into a full-blown midlife crisis. It doesn't even matter if you are in the traditional midlife age zone. Everyone's life is currently at the mid-stage between pre-virus and post-virus, so legally it counts as a midlife crisis, however old you are. Panic about your personal future, priorities, values, philosophy of life, finances, political views, status, prospects, ambitions, hopes, fears, relationships, and general spiritual id. And don't forget to take regular breaks for snacks, meals, hydration, and looking at the sky wondering what the f*** it's all about. Thursday, bickering. Much as we love our families, there are only so many board games, sing-alongs, film nights, biscuit bakings, experimental poetry recitals, seances and educational dissections of the mouse corpse you found at the back of the cupboard you finally got round to clearing out of a decade's worth of accumulated junk that any family can take. So pep up the day with some trivial arguments. Allow those simmering irritations that have been bubbling up to boil over into genuine rancour. A well-structured day of squabbling will encompass a mixture of ephemeral snap grudges, peevish oversensitivity to mild criticism, long-held gripes and groundless resentments about nothing in particular. You might like to consider having a go at one of your cohabitors, family or otherwise, for example, not finishing their sentences, eating salad too noisily, working in the international arms trade, or being the kind of person who might work in the international arms trade, or building a shrine to the 1960s pop legends Herman's Hermits on the sofa without full written permission. Anything to get the squabble going, then riff it from there for as long as it takes until you get a solid week's peace and quiet from each other. And Friday, paganism. Lockdown is a great time to learn new skills, and in these times of cosmic uncertainty, why not get back to human basics with an introductory home course in the basics of pagan worship? Online lessons are available covering everything from basic incantations via effective and hygienic sacrificing to entry-level henging. Begin with paper, then move up to cardboard within a few days, wood in a week or two, progressing all the way to stone inside 6 weeks. Also consider exorcisms, a great way to bond as a family unit and cleanse the spirits of your loved ones. Plus, have some hilarious stories to share afterwards about the paroxysms of spiritual excess that the exorcee went through as the demons left their bodies. And finally, for the weekend, Saturday, whimpering on the sofa. You've made it to the weekend. Relax and spend the day in a fug of low-level misery on the couch. And Sunday, making vague plans that you have no realistic hope of actually putting into action. Put the negativity of the past week behind you by thinking about stuff that you might do in the future before giving up on that and watching a TV cop show. That is your Bugle guide to how to keep busy during the lockdown.
Well, I'm picking a historical period by which to live each week, matching my diet, manners and acceptable thoughts to think to the period I've chosen. This week it's been the Regency period. I spent yesterday in epistolary correspondence and today planning a ball.
Very strong. I mean, this is one of the few occasions where you can say things were better in the old days. It's actually viable to be actively nostalgic. And it doesn't even have to be the old days. It could be 4 weeks ago. Things were better for, you know, we're actually, if you're into nostalgia, fill your boots, your moment's here. This is your moment.
I'm just beating myself up over missed chances. All the times, even 4 weeks ago, that I could have just breathed on someone with impunity. I feel sad that I'm...
Well, that's one of the joys to look forward to when all this is behind us. The freedom to just go up and breathe on a stranger without repercussions.
we take stuff for granted, don't we, in life?
I just want to be Aslan in the BBC version of the Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe.
What, a giant glove puppet?
He did some great breathing,
Aslan.
Is that
not what we all are? Is that not what we all are, Al?
I don't know what you've got up your butt.
Giant glove puppets on the hand of fate. Top story this week, the virus again. It's getting slightly irritating to have to keep coming back to this, but there is literally no other news in the universe currently.
How short a period ago was it when we were sick of Brexit and Trump? And now it's... I would have given anything to not have to talk about Brexit or Trump anymore. And now...
Well, I mean, Trump's managed to get himself pretty well.
Well, Trump, yes, Trump has managed. I mean, God bless him. He's managed to find a way through to in this story, isn't he? To cut through regardless. I mean, it's his unique ability, isn't it? It's no matter what the calamity is, he's on hand to find his way to the very centre of the story and make it about him. It's a sort of heroic, really, on some. I mean, that's not how the historians are going to write it up. But at the moment, it's sort of extraordinary, isn't it? You know, and because I was listening to the Today program the other morning, and he did call it a hoax, didn't he? He did call it a hoax, and there was some US spokesman going, he didn't call it a hoax. He's like, oh, come on, let him just say, yeah, he did call it a hoax, because it doesn't even. He's so capable of operating. In a way that it doesn't matter if he called it a hoax or not. He's extraordinary. He lives in this 24-hour cycle. Every day's a new day if you're Donald Trump. It's fantastic.
He's got Snapchat for a brain. Once something's said, it just evaporates into the mist of time.
It's gone. It's long gone, never to return. Yeah, it's fantastic.
Well, Al, you have a small child.
Yes. And,
you know, it's one of the great privileges of being a child that you can flatly deny having said things that you clearly said. And we've seen this with Trump. There was further evidence as to the extent to which he is essentially a child. The Director General of the World Health Organization, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, urged governments not to politicize the pandemic. It's not too difficult to work out exactly which governments he was most issuing this plea to. On Wednesday, he said, "We will have many body bags in front of us if we don't behave." Now, that use of the word behave, it couldn't have made it clearer that he was, in essence, speaking to a child.
Yeah.
Unless he'd said to Mr. Trump directly, look, Father Christmas is not going to come unless we have a coherent, cooperative international effort.
Well, you're absolutely right there, Alice. You said to talk about anything other than Donald Trump. But, like, the worst that could happen until the coronavirus was Donald Trump, and now the worst that can happen is Donald Trump and the coronavirus.
Yes, it's cumulative. It's sort of like, there's no indulgences like the Catholic Church. You can't wipe out one wrong with a right.
And he's literally catalytic, isn't he? He increases the reaction without changing himself.
Bit of science.
Lovely.
Bit of science for you there.
Lovely.
It is, strange. Britain has had no prime minister this week, as we will touch on later, and America has had no president for a long time. So effectively, Donald Trump has abdicated but remains in office. He resigned to all intents and purposes, but still has to pretend to do his job. He's had considerable criticism, as you'd expect, from the non-Trumpian media. The columnist Q. Julius Schloznitz in the esteemed political journal The Natterer wrote, "American democracy is spluttering for breath, begging for the oxygen of decency, leadership and good sense. The political protective equipment of its constitution bunged into an incinerator and replaced with a tattered, piss-stained flag." Not my words, the words of someone I just made up. He's this week blasted through his 17,000th presidential pardon for himself for voluntary manslaughter arising from this crisis. Now, he wouldn't have been necessarily guilty of all of them, but I guess better safe than sorry when it comes to these things. He offered Boris Johnson, the stricken British leader, some of his free medicine. I can't remember exactly what he said to Boris.
I've sent four really great drug companies. Everyone says they're the most amazing drug companies in the world. I've sent them to the doctors. It's got really good doctors around him. That's what he said. He didn't name them. I mean, it's so brilliantly bonkers. Four of them. All right, okay. Well, not three. Not five. Four unnamed drug companies.
It sounded to me something like this. And it's quite strange to see the President of America peddling scam cures, essentially. This is unprecedented since Calvin Coolidge tried to convince America that bunions could be cured by marinating your foot in a strawberry milkshake, or Ulysses S. Grant promoted snakes as a cure for worms. Britain news now, and Prime Minister Boris Johnson has been in and thankfully now out of intensive care, having tested positive for the coronavirus some time ago now. This was, Al, it's been a very curious week, hasn't it?
It's been fantastic. Boris has shown the virus who was boss and the country who his deputy was. And the deputy is Dominic Raab, as we all know, is an actor possessed by the master in Doctor Who.
He just looks like every little CEO picture at the front of an annual portfolio, Dominic Raab.
He's going to unzip his skin like this. At the press conference, he's going to reach in and unzip his skin from his belly button and emerge and he's the master. There's no other explanation for it. I mean, basically a bunch of grifting idiot Tories who've been overpromoted have ended up in charge of the clown car. I mean, that's the other explanation. But
it's hard to know which is the right one, Noel. We can't jump to conclusions in these turbulent times.
Well, Downing Street's bigger on the inside than it looks. So it could be. Maybe he's the master.
He looks like the captain of a high school karate team who just peaked in high school. And, you know, he wouldn't have been the one going, "Sweep the leg, Johnny," but he would have been the one standing behind the guy saying, "Sweep the leg, Johnny." he's that guy. I'm glad that Boris Johnson's better because now we can make fun of him again, which is nice. I want him to feel incredibly ill, but only in the moral sense, at the Nietzschean moment of having to look at himself in the mirror every morning and see only the void staring back.
He does seem to be on the mend and hopefully will soon be able to return to his lifelong dream of being a wartime leader. Thus far, he's been more Neville Chamberlain than Winston Churchill, but baby steps. It was kind of weird, the reaction to his illness and his colleagues and deputy saying, "We're sure he'll get through this because he's a fighter," which is about as relevant to dealing with this horrific disease as saying, "We're sure he'll get through this because he's got blonde hair, or because he's a rugby fan, or because he owns a pogo stick, or because he's a bit of a tosser and a congenital liar." None of which is really relevant to whether or not he was able to fight off.
Maybe a coronavirus you can fob off. Maybe your immune system goes, "I'm not really here." I don't know. We don't know, do we? Maybe there are some of the qualities you've just listed are actually, you know, we're all going to have to be injected with dishonesty as the vaccine. We don't know yet. I mean, I think you're rushing well ahead of the science here, Andy.
That's a pickup line someone used on me once. Can I inject you with some dishonesty?
What I really love about British politics, people go, "We have an unwritten constitution. That's what's so brilliant about it." And then the Prime Minister is potentially mortally ill with the illness that's wiping the country out. And, we don't actually have, we don't have a procedure in place for when he's ill and he can't do his job. No, not really. No, we haven't got one. And then everyone shits the bed, understandably. But it's unwritten, so it's better. I mean, the whole thing's... You know, maybe it's timed. Maybe we don't have to write it down. We at least have talked about it, maybe.
Well, we've seen the true horror of the cabinet of none of the talents that has been built up by Prime Minister Johnson, brought home by the sight of Dominic Raab, and also the lack of sight of Home Secretary Priti Patel. Now, you'd have thought the Home Secretary would be fairly prominent during this current crisis, but I think she's been kept behind the government's emergency force field, which we spent billions on preparing for an alien invasion.
I mean, what the fuck is that actually about? I mean, to cut to the sort of, what on earth is going on? Is it because she said so many embarrassing things about the people who are now having to haul the country out of this? So, you know, all these key workers who are who do turn out to be an awful lot of them from abroad and so on, and she's been making all those threatening noises. Have we discovered that Priti Patel actually does have a sense of embarrassment? We've hit her shame membrane? The virus.
I don't know, maybe that she's been injected with that, with some kind of special shame activating serum. I mean, to be fair to Raab and Priti Patel, I mean, it's easy to be negative and cynical at times like this, but they are in the top 40 to 50 million British people best qualified for high-level political office. In fact, I've just got the official rankings here, and there are, in fact, 38.73 million people precisely in Britain better qualified than Raab to be Foreign Secretary. And he's only actually a million or so places ahead of me, so he's not quite as bad as many people have been saying. Boris, I mean, it's a very strange situation because we've seen the Scottish Chief Medical Officer having to resign for not following her own advice, and have Robert Jenrick, another cabinet minister, being heavily criticised for not going completely by the letter of government advice. But the Prime Minister, a few weeks ago, was observing social distancing guidelines with even less rigour than I observe kosher guidelines. And I assume they're guidelines. They might be stricter than that. I forget. His father, Stanley Johnson, said, amongst the extraordinary things that have been said about this whole issue, to use that American expression, he almost took one for the team.
What?
We've got to make sure we play the game properly now.
Huh?
Now, I don't know in what way Boris Johnson was taking one for the team, or almost taking one for the... I don't know if we're to assume that if the virus had succeeded, and shall we say permanently incapacitating the Prime Minister, it would have just packed up and moved on to another country, and you know, he would have saved the nation by his sacrifice. I don't know if he's been heroically diving in front of vulnerable oldies in nursing homes, snatching the virus from their very mouths, gobbling it down and saying, "This one's on me, Deirdre." And those words, "we've got to make sure we play the game properly now," yes, but we also had to make sure we were playing the game properly f***ing weeks ago, as evidenced by the story still coming out about surgical gowns running. He could have got school kids to sew surgical gowns out of leftover bits of cloth from school kits. Well, sorry.
It's very rare, Andy, that you actually show true anger. Often I find the anger on this programme confected and contrived, but for once... true emotion displayed. The Bugle listener doesn't realise that we're doing... probably doesn't know that we're doing this by Zoom, so I can actually see Andy as he descends into this froth of fury, this yes. boiling pit of rage, uncharacteristically so.
Surprising.
Yeah, it's an awful lot of froth. More froth than I was expecting, frankly.
Al, you're a published historian, and you've written about...
I've written about history. I haven't written any actual history.
You've written about the Second World War, and there's been an unstoppable deluge of war references, war language, war analogies. Boris Johnson on the 23rd of March says, "In this fight, we can be in no doubt that each and every one of us is directly enlisted." There's kind of the Queen referencing Vera Lynn, and I think there was a draft of a speech Boris Johnson was due to give this week before he was sadly hospitalised, in which he pretty much lifted straight from Churchill. "We shall fight on the sofas, we shall fight on the landing, we shall fight in the kitchen and in the bedroom, we shall not fight in the hills, please stay at home, do not go to the hills to fight, you have to stay at home. We have temporarily surrendered in the hope that we can de-surrender when the time is right, go Team GB."
The beaches are closed.
Is it helpful, do you think, to have all this sort of...
It's all we got, right? I mean, you know, you can't compare this to Henry VIII and his six wives, which is the only other thing people know about history-wise. I mean, is this virus Catherine of Aragon, or is it Anne Boleyn? You know, we have got nothing else in our national historical locker. I mean, interestingly enough, or the only other thing anyone's got is the Nazis from GCSE history, when they have to do the Nazis, GCSE Nazis, and that doesn't quite fit here, at least not yet. You know, not until Plod is actually going through your shopping trolley to find out whether you've got the essential items you require. That hasn't happened yet, but it's all, you know, it's all we've got. I mean, you did it yourself. You described him as Chamberlain rather than Churchill. I mean, I think he's much more in the Asquith role in the First World War, is a far more apt metaphor. But no, I don't know. Of course, the sweet ironies roll on that, you know, the Bundeswehr, the German army, is sending us ventilators. And a German friend of mine, he put up a Facebook going, "Oh, for fuck's sake," you know, because he's sick of all the war talk here. and always has been, even though he is a Second World War historian. He looks at it through this mad prism and have you any idea what it's like to be German with this going on? And then, and I say to him, you started it. And then, and because the thing he always forgets is that because there's a large slice of nationalism in the way people talk about the war like this, that essentially it adapts and survives. So the Bundeswehr sending us ventilators, of course they ought to, they owe us. That's how the British Second World War mindset adopts to that. Yeah, they owe us the favour because we saved them from themselves, so they owe us those ventilators. Mm-hmm. I don't care if we spent the last 3 years telling them to f*** off and basically trying to start what would have been a war. You know, I mean, the way we've tried to walk out on all of our international arrangements in the last 3 years would have started a war in the 1740s, no, or even the 1880s. You know, that we've done stuff, but they won't bite. Well, the bastards won't bite. Anyway, the point is, it is all we've got historically. It's that or the Six Wives of Henry VIII. Can you see Stalin behind me? I've got a Stalin bass drum head there.
I can see Daleks in the House of Commons.
Stalin glimpsing through the ether there. There he is. God bless him. not God bless him. No, exactly. The Second World War. But it is. It's all we've got. It's the only game in town, you know. It is interesting though, because I've friends who are paramedics, and they are talking about being the front line and going into fight. And I'm not going to tell them they shouldn't. I'm not going to go, I don't know that you should talk about it like that, because they're on the receiving end of this thing. So
I have a friend who's an NHS worker, and he's classed as an essential worker, and he's very embarrassed because everyone who knows that he works for the NHS is calling him a hero, but what he does is filing.
Well, we shall file them on the beaches and so on. I mean, someone's got to do the filing. Now, isn't this the thing? This is. Oh. All right, I'll clap a little less next Thursday then, because of the people doing the filing. Yeah, no, you're doing filing. Sorry. Yeah.
Well, these national rounds of applause on Thursday evenings have been quite remarkable, really. It's quite moving noise. I was outside my house yesterday, and you can sort of hear from all the streets around this, people clapping and banging saucepans and all that. It's a phenomenon that is uniquely British, apart from all the other places that were doing it before us. But it's uniquely British, nonetheless, like so many other uniquely British things. It's good to see a sense that we are gradually awakening to who and what is really valuable in society. And this, in turn, could save the economy quite a lot of money, because it could lead to a massive pay cut for NHS staff and carers and the like, because these jobs must be so spiritually rewarding and paid for with the honey of public applause, that to then give people decent money for it cheapens and trivializes.
Andy, have you ever heard that much applause on a Thursday evening around 8 o'clock?
Well, around 8 o'clock I have. It's usually when by the time I finish at 10 o'clock.
Especially as you're only booked for doing 15 minutes.
Anyway, to balance things out with these very positive rounds of applause on Thursday, on Monday evenings at 8 p.m. from next week, there will be a national boo as well for all the people who've really done absolutely nothing to help in the current situation, the politicians who fail to heed warnings and take precautions, the disaster capitalists and hedge fund shyster punters who are profiteering from the misfortunes of the world, also, you know, the lower level workers who deserve our opprobrium as well, the bailiffs and the payday loan sharks. So do go out at 8 p.m. next Monday and really let rip. Bogus theories news now, and apparently the virus is not caused by the virus itself, but by 5G communication masts. This is according to no less a source than multiple celebrities online, leading to physical attacks on telephone poles, which does suggest that we've got a little way to go in evolution as a species. Other people are blaming it on landlines or yoghurt pots with strings attached to them. Suspicion of communication is deep set in the human collective psyche, really, pretty much ever since the bubonic plague was spread by carrier pigeons. And I guess it's one of the lessons of the social media age that there is absolutely nothing that could happen on this planet or elsewhere in the universe that will not be met with an absolute Niagara of online bullshit.
Apparently, Woody Harrelson has been putting out the news that the 5G towers are responsible in some way for the coronavirus. Why would you follow or believe in the real news when you can follow and believe Woody Harrelson, a man who's famous for playing drunks and maniacs? It's astonishing to me how personally celebrities are taking the coronavirus, from the stars who we're realizing are completely at sea without a team of people telling them what not to do, like Madonna in a milk bath talking about equality, or basically anyone in Hollywood that isn't Tom Hanks. But they're having a disproportionate impact, apparently. A study was done saying that while they are putting out about 20% of the information on coronavirus, they're having much more of an impact on the hearts and minds of people who are taking what they say very seriously.
You're absolutely right. 5G weren't happening now, it would be whatever was happening, wouldn't it? It would be it would be gramophone records, wouldn't it? Well, what caused the Spanish flu? The gramophone, probably.
The Spanish?
hey now, steady on. Because someone burned a 4G mast down last night in Birmingham, apparently.
Oh, the wrong mast.
Right.
The wrong, I mean, that's what, whole G out.
It's an own goal.
Trump, again, has been in the forefront of crackpot theories. He's saying that the virus could be caused by factor 30 sunblock, but cured by factor 50 sunblock. Also cured by a paste made up of crushed up temazepam, aioli, stick deodorant and cobwebs, syringed into a bullet casing and fired into your own foot from a Colt 45. He's also claimed that the virus could be cured simply by grabbing someone by their genitals, retreading his much misinterpreted advice so widely publicised in the build-up to the 2016 presidential election on how to make women immune to scurvy.
Oh, is that what vitamin C stands for?
Nature news now, and well, nature continues to exist despite the virus, and in fact it's made a bit of a comeback in some ways. There have been goats roaming the streets in Britain, the first sighting of an auroch in Britain since the Bronze Age. For 3,000 years those horny-headed fluffy bastards have been lying low. Also pandas have apparently been mating for the first time in years. Alice, you are our animal sexual congress correspondent. Bring us up to date with the latest news.
Yes, everybody's favourite celibate panda couple, Ying Ying and Li Li, at the Ocean Park Zoo have started banging again. And all it took was the zoo shutting down. It's they'd been... They've spent about 10 years not having sex in front of people, and now the zoo's shut down. They are at it, apparently, potentially leading to a coronavirus baby, or the first of the coronials, as the new baby boom will be called. And what it means to me, I think, is that either the pandas are enjoying the privacy, they don't like being perved on while they're banging, which makes them unique among politicians, or they're really turned on by the idea of humanity in crisis.
Well, it's their moment, isn't it? Yeah. Quick, make some babies. The planet will be ours soon, isn't it? It's I don't know. That's the panda's accent. I've watched too much Paddington, who seems like an awfully nice sort of fey gentleman, Paddington. Anyway, the thing is that this is a very interesting idea that they're at it now that they're not being watched anymore. Does that mean if you don't watch Pornhub, they have even more sex? You know. The watched panda never f***s, isn't it? It's
also, a f***ing panda is right twice a day.
Yeah, very philosophical.
Well, it's a time to be philosophical, isn't it, Andy? I mean, f*** all else to do.
Unless you're a panda, in which case there is something else to do, which am case I right?
F*** all, yeah. But I've seen the photographs. I mean, because they have published images, haven't they? And it's one panda behind the other doing what, you know, I believe this is the classical sort of doggy style. I don't know. It's what it was certainly
panda style.
It's panda style now, isn't it? They're gonna redefine the entire thing, aren't they?
I feel like pandas would have a poetic name for it. They seem the type.
What, the praying lotus or something? Or the...
I mean, we don't know. It could be like the 5G. It could just be coincidence. They could have just been engaging in extremely extended foreplay for the past 10 years.
Yeah. That's right. It could be.
Well, it's understandable if you're in a zoo, you know, locked in a cage with another animal for 10 years. You don't want to make things awkward, do you? You don't want to spoil the friendship. You've got to take your time.
The male pandas have been saying, trust me. Sex would just ruin everything. We're really good friends.
I just imagine, I imagine that they've been trying both. They've had unrequited crushes on each other, but it's sort of like a Hugh Grant situation in a rom-com where they just keep awkwardly making mistakes and then feeling too embarrassed.
You're saying the panda is British?
Yes.
As a species.
I think that's definitely the case.
In other natural world news, scientists have found a sea creature made up of, quote, millions of clones that takes the form of essentially a bit of silly string 120 metres long. It's formed of a predatory colony of clone organisms that hunt down and slay their enemies, to which the obvious response is, what the f***? This is the last f***ing thing we need right now, an army of fishy clones preparing to take over the f***ing world. It is possible, of course, that the ocean clone beings are working in tandem with the virus in some kind of tag team apocalypse, but these are deeply distressing times. 120 metre long bit of clone silly string in the sea.
It looks like a sort of runny cow pat, doesn't it?
I think it's so beautiful. It's sort of bioluminescent. It's like this giant, it's essentially a Borg hive mind. It's bigger than any of the other creatures of its type that have yet been discovered. It's very coordinated, and it's also an awe-inspiringly beautiful piece of the natural world. A lot like Lizzo. That was the only joke I had. I reckon you guys are too old to get how good that joke is.
Andy, who's Lizzo?
I thought it was a cleaning product.
Isn't it someone from Greece?
She's very beautiful and very coordinated and also quite big. Right. She's a pop star. She plays the flute. Get into it, man.
Okay. I'm still catching. I haven't finished the 50s yet. Sport now, and there was some sport last weekend, the virtual Grand National. I don't know if you... Did you see this, Al? The computerised version of the Grand National last weekend. It was graphically realistic. There were some glitches in the technology, however. The pre-pseudo-race pseudo-favourite Tiger Roll, who won the real Grand National the last 2 years, was kidnapped by some terrorists who'd accidentally transferred across to the virtual Grand National from the counter-terrorism simulator game Snake Breaker Dominion of Rage. This left things clear for the 28-1 shot Spartacus Tutsi to take an early lead before he fell at Beecher's Brook, fence 6, and in obvious distress was then graphically put down by a military attack helicopter as the game took some liberties with Grand National reality. A glitch in the programming then resulted in a robot horse ridden by Yul Brynner joining the race and shooting the then leader, the hotly tipped Whip Me I Like It, and its celebrity virtual jockey Winston Churchill. People's Choice entry championed the Wonder Horse, the 1950s TV star horse, who was voted to take part from a shortlist of popular celebrity horses, ran creditably to finish ninth, avoiding the carnage when Lewis Hamilton's car mowed down 6 of the virtual horses. company Sham Sports, who were running the virtual Grand National, were also running a virtual F1 race on the same afternoon, and there was apparently a bit of a glitchy crossover. It then looked like 12-1 second favourite Dostoevsky Daddle was going to romp home after clearing the last, but a very realistic looking Emily Davidson ran out from the crowd at the elbow to rugby tackle him. Bit anachronistic and inaccurate, but a nice touch, leaving 50-1 outsider Terrapin Hoodwinkle to win after the three horses in front of him started buffering due to a dodgy internet connection. Next week, there'll be a virtual boat race. It's going to be HMS Victory versus the Marie Celeste.
Andy, in the absence of sport, your mind is a truly marvellous place.
Bugle home education section now, and I did promise you a history exam last week, and we've overrun once again, so we'll just do a couple of questions from it, and then we'll have part two of the history exam next week. Al, I know you're a keen history supporter.
That's my team. That's who I turn up for every Saturday afternoon.
The past.
Yeah.
So I'll let you guess some answers to some of these questions. And for any Bugle listeners homeschooling, you can set this for your children as well. Question one is an odd one out question. Yep. Pick the odd one out from the following seven historical figures: Ivan the Terrible, Genghis Khan, Emperor Nero, Vlad the Impaler, Tamerlane the Great, Shirley Temple, and Joseph Stalin.
I'm going Tamerlane the Great.
Alice, any guesses on that one?
I don't know, Emperor Nero.
It's in fact Shirley Temple. Oh. She's the only one who would not have been allowed to be a member of the Marylebone Cricket Club before 1995. question two is more of a kind of essay type question. Explain how different history would have been if humans had evolved with snouts on their faces. Refer to at least three of the following historical phenomena: the Ming Dynasty, the Renaissance, and the Eurovision Song Contest.
And with a snout, there'd be no need for a Ming vase. we'd be looking at trade in Ming bowls, so you could get your snout into the bowl rather than a vase. Because if you've got a snout, you can smell flowers at a distance, so you don't need to bring them into the house, put them in a vase. So that, I think, is one of the main differences in human history that would... what were the other eras?
The Renaissance.
We just wouldn't have had one.
I think we're having a denaissance.
Oh, yeah, very, very definitely. Totally denaissance. We just wouldn't have had one. So things, and that would have meant no Reformation. We'd basically still be like the 13th century.
Right. Well, that's something to cling to.
Yeah.
And question three, the last question this week, we'll have the rest next week. In no fewer than one word, outline the four most important factors in the avoidance of a bilateral war between Canada and Indonesia in the years 1250 to 1600. You can answer that one in your own time. Anyway, that brings us to the end of... since it's holiday time, we don't really need to do homeschooling right now. But anyway, I'll have the rest of the history exam next week. Thank you very much for joining me. Al, have you got any other virus lockdown projects on the go that people can tune into?
Well, I'm doing, if people are interested, my Second World War podcast, We Have Ways of Making You Talk. Me and James Holland, who's actually a historian, me going, what? No, come off it. And him telling you exactly how many merchant seamen died in the Second World War. It's amazing what he knows. And we're doing that at the moment, and we've been doing a load of extra content. I've been doing we've been finding books that are out of print, and I've been doing them as audiobooks and putting them up on our, we've got a little Patreon site now.
So nice.
Yeah, it's actually been, it started off as, I thought, well, this is a good idea. And then once you've read a whole book out loud, you think, oh God, I'm going to have to do another one. But it's been really cool. I'm reading a book by a guy who was a fighter pilot on Malta, but who was also an artist. So his descriptions of it all are incredibly vivid, because he's always thinking in terms of the colour and the spectacle. And it's so I'm doing that. That's what I'm doing.
And where can people find all that?
There's a Twitter account called @WeHaveWaysPod, because it's called We Have Ways of Making You Talk, and it's on Acast. And then there's a Patreon with the same name. But if people are interested, and it's fun, and we're collecting people's family histories as well from the war, which has been really amazing, really, really incredible stuff people have been telling us.
Alice, of course, the last post just through its 100th episode.
Yeah, since the 1st of January, it's been 100 episodes of absolute f***ing nonsense. And
wow, you are motoring, aren't you? That's amazing.
My brain is slowly disintegrating under the pressure. Also, my special Savage will be coming out on Amazon Prime on the 17th of April. I'll be having a live watching party for that with Neil Gaiman. So look at my social media for that. That's alliterative, A-L-I-T-E-R-A-T-I-V-E on Instagram and Twitter.
Thank you very much for listening, Buglers. We will play you out, as always, with some lies about our premium voluntary subscribers. To join them, go to thebuglepodcast.com and click the donate button. Q. Tim Stromstad once signed into an online forum to discuss the best domestic uses for sporting equipment with the apparently innocuous username Glockenspiel Eucalyptus, only to be met with a barrage of invective from another user who went by the pseudonym Unbeloved Chocolate. Kim explains, Unbeloved Chocolate had suffered a childhood trauma when he was hit on the head by a Glockenspiel falling out of a eucalyptus tree. He was perhaps, understandably, a bit cross. Alina I was involved in that online discussion and won a forum record number of likes for her suggestion that two heat-coated badminton rackets could be used to grill toasted sandwiches, a baseball glove would make a serviceable coconut ripener, and a rugby ball with halved squash balls glued to it would work very well as a communal dummy for a litter of young puppies or kittens. Rhys Finney is the proud non-owner of any cutlery or crockery. I don't believe humans should have any further advantages in the food chain, says Rhys. We've already got opposable thumbs and industrialised farming, so if I can't eat stuff using only my bare hands as implements, I'm not interested. Hashtag food fairness for all species. Isabella Cawthorne dreams of setting up an orchestra for people who cannot play musical instruments. For too long, argues Isabella, top-level classical music has been the preserve of people who have put in years of effort to learn an instrument. This is patently unfair to people who did not have that opportunity or couldn't be bothered. Catherine Fearon volunteers to be the first member of Isabella's instrumentless orchestra. Many people have a talent for doing impressions of instruments, says Catherine. I, for example, play the invisible trumpet very well indeed. I can do a passable air bassoon too, and my friend's uncle sounds like a tuba when he's drunk. This plan is on. Vivek Anand Sridhar believes all political leaders should walk on stilts and wear massive cloaks, like mythical giant rulers from another dimension. I think we would respect them more, argues Vivek Anand, and they might talk less rubbish if they were having to concentrate on not falling off their stilts, or, if they were outside on a windy day, not being blown over by a strong gust of wind to the cloak. And finally, Brian Meissner once convinced a waiter in a restaurant that he was exempt from paying for his food until the following day because he was a believer in metabolism, a legally protected spiritual sect that held that a meal was not complete until the full process of digestion had taken place. To be fair to Brian, he did return to the restaurant the following day and pay. Here endeth this week's Lies.